All of the newest episodes of Note to Self are now available on the Luminary podcast app. It's free to download, and you can also listen to other podcasts from WNYC studios like Radiolab, Two Dope Queens, Snap Judgment, Here's the Thing with Alec Baldwin, and others. Luminary Premium is the only place where you can enjoy the entire new season of Note to Self, plus new original podcasts you won't find anywhere else, from Trevor Noah, Roxane Gay, Guy Raz, Lena Dunham, and many more. And you can enjoy them ad-free. Start your free trial by going to luminary.link/note to self or download the Luminary app for free.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is New Tech City, WNYC's weekly look at how technology is changing the way New Yorkers live. I'm Manoush Zomorodi. The Digital Book World Conference opens this morning in Midtown Manhattan. It bills itself as the most important get-together for publishing professionals to figure out how to compete in a digital age as ebooks and self-publishing upend their market. Well, one author has a suggestion for them. Guy Kawasaki, the former Apple evangelist, has written 10 traditionally published books and self-published two. His most recent is called Ape, Author, Publisher, Entrepreneur, A Guide to Self-Publishing. I ran into him last week in Las Vegas when I was at the Consumer Electronics Show. And here's his take on what needs to happen for New York's publishing community.
The traditional publishing business, I think, is threatened by self-publishing, or what I call artisanal publishing. It's because in the old days, which is not that long ago, in the old days, think about the value that a traditional publisher added. First of all, it acted as a distribution mechanism. Essentially, it got dead trees to retailers. That is a non-trivial task. Traditional publishers did that very well. Secondly, the imprint of a publisher was a proxy for quality. If Putnam, Penguin, Simon & Schuster, McGraw-Hill published a book, you could pretty much depend it was a good book. And so now, well, the third factor is shelf space was limited. So there had to be a filter because Barnes & Noble only had, 100,000 square feet. They only had so much shelf. If you look at the world today, shelf space is basically unlimited. For an ebook, it doesn't matter if Amazon has 5 million, 50 million, or 500 million books. I mean, server space increases, but not shelf space. And today, I don't think people use a publisher's imprint as a proxy for quality. People go to Amazon, they say, oh, 3 stars, not interested. 4.5 stars, interested. 5 stars, I'll buy it. So they look at the number of stars, they read the most recent reviews, and they one-click buy or they don't. So the publisher's imprint, well, frankly, if you look at Amazon, it's difficult to figure out who the publisher is anymore on that page. You really have to look for who's your publisher. So basically, all these factors are changing. This is a mega change to the publishing business. And I think the publishing business, like the music business, like the video business, is trying to preserve old models. Maybe it's out of habit. Maybe because there's lack of any other alternative. But they really should rethink their business. And whether they like it or not, Amazon is showing the way. So one great example, Amazon has this thing called Amazon Encore. So what Amazon does is it watches which ebooks, self-published books, are doing well. Then it contacts those authors and say, we want to acquire your book. We'll put it on the Amazon Encore program, which means now we'll throw Amazon's marketing behind your book. You were selling well as yourself. Imagine what Amazon Encore could do. And we want, you know, options on your next book. That's a brilliant strategy, right? So it is acquiring books that are not theoretically going to sell well. They're acquiring books that are selling well. And so every traditional publisher should look at that and say, you know, that's the model. You cherry pick the self-published books that are selling well and pick up that author. How many traditional publishers are doing that?
For more of my interview with Guy Kawasaki, including his advice on how self-published authors can market themselves and why he would go back to a traditional publisher in a heartbeat, go to our website, wnyc.org/tech. Okay, so that's the publishing folks. People in the travel industry are meeting up this week, too, at the annual New York Times Travel Show. And Times Travel reporter Stephanie Rosenblum joins me now. And Stephanie, if we're lucky enough to get out of here this winter, what are some ways that tech can make the experience less of a hassle?
There are actually many ways that you can kind of make it easier. And one of them, you know, let me give you an example. For instance, I often travel solo. And when I'm doing that, I think to myself, even before I leave the house, what are some ways that I might be able to connect with other travelers? And some of that is based in technology. You know, there are a lot of websites now and apps that you can use to actually let people know where you're going to be or where you're thinking of being and kind of connect with them before you even, you know, pack up your suitcase and head to the airport.
What about how we fly? I know you recently went on the Dreamliner. How is that changing the way we travel?
Well, the Dreamliner, I think, is aiming to make being in the plane a kind of less oppressive experience. You know, sometimes you're in a plane and you've got that sense that the sort of ceiling is low and that you can't really see out the window unless you're next to the window. And even if you're not, someone's pulled the shade down. So you feel like you're in, you know, a can, which you are, really. But what the Dreamliner has done is made the windows 30% larger, right, so that anywhere you're sitting, you sort of feel that the plane is airier. They've also redesigned those overhead bins so they don't feel like they're coming down as low right over your head. The windows that I'm mentioning also have this technology where instead of there being a shade that you lift up and down, you press a button and it tints the window in different shades, which is kind of nice because it still lets some light filter through even though the window has darkened. Speaking of lighting, you also have a situation on those planes where they have this LED lighting, and it's essentially mood lighting. And so if they want to create the feeling of it being morning, they can do that. If they want to take the lights to relaxation mode, they can do that. And what they believe is that if they get the lighting just so, it's going to help with jet lag because it's going to sort of gently cue your body as to when to relax and when to be awake.
Okay, so my last question for you is, all this stuff is online. We can access it from anywhere. Why does the Times even need a travel expo if everything is digital?
You know, what we try to get at the best part of technology is sort of facilitating the in-person connections. You know, it's the same thing with online dating, right? Like, you might use the site to actually meet someone, but the goal is to get rid of the technology and just be face-to-face. And that's ultimately what travel is about. It's that experience connecting with another human being. So all this tech stuff is wonderful and it smooths things out, but it's more of a facilitator than the end result.
Stephanie Rosenblum, travel writer for The New York Times. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Check out our website, wnyc.org/tech, for Stephanie's three favorite smartphone apps for travel. Let us know what your favorite travel app or gadget is on Twitter at New Tech City. And go to iTunes to download our previous shows to listen to on any long flights you have coming up. And while you're there, go ahead, give us a rating. I'm Anoush Samarodi, and this is New Tech City from WNYC.